Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Hey, what is going on, guys? It's Joe.
And Troy.
And we're back with another installment of Cannon Fodder, a weekly recap and behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Woo! Woo!
We're doing it again, buddy. These things are coming week after week.
I like it. I like it. I think it's a nice addition to the show.
Yep, and the fans seem to like it, too. You guys are emailing in great questions. It's awesome to hear from everybody and to see what kind of stuff you're interested in finding out. We are going to do some listener mail this week because we got something,
yes.
So that's awesome. And we're going to talk about episode 57, which...
I loved it.
A couple days ago, we released episode 57, our first, and correct me if I'm wrong, but our first non-combat episode in quite a while. Right?
Yes. You know what? I'm thinking, though, the episode where you meet Della, there was no combat in that episode.
Oh, that's right. But it was teased right at the end. And, well, same thing happens at 57, too. So
that's kind of
your story. Okay. So it hasn't been too long.
Too
but that
long.
Just, yeah.
But you guys were in the throes of battle. This was an episode to regroup and really check in with the players and the PCs. And that's what you guys were desperately needed.
Right. And maybe that is... That hits the nail on the head a little bit better, because finding Della, like, it wasn't exactly, we were in a very dangerous place.
Right.
We were very stressed out. At this point, this was us returning to a place that we think is relatively safe compared to the Vault of Thorns. But we all know that, you know, Rag's boat is a floating death trap.
Right.
But it was a bit of a homecoming, you know, and mm-hmm. we knew that we actually, for the first time, would have to face the emotions of really losing Gormley. You know, we were no longer on that adrenaline high of, like, we got to stay alive. We found a new ally. She seems pretty badass. Let's keep going. Let's get out of here alive. And then the combat with Iwiga and finding the items. And, you know, you're running hot. And then you have, what, 4 days in the swamp? 3 or 4 days traveling back, and it's just you get this sense that the characters are starting to settle in, mm-hmm. that Gormley's really gone, you know, and you're thinking you took this episode to say, let's have the players just do a little role playing for a bit, not feel under the threat of imminent combat at any point,
right?
And explore their where they're at,
and to really deal with the loss of Gormley and Ben Vereen. Don't forget Ben Vereen. Like,
I
think the players needed to have that moment with them, and it ended up being momentous.
Yeah, it was, you know, breaking the news to Rag, you know, the whole how do we get everybody over there by boat situation was very interesting. By, what do you call it, the jolly boat? Jolly boats. But then the funeral. We have the funeral pyre where we, you know, say a final goodbye to Gormley, and we get some good news with the bad.
Yeah.
Interesting choice, making sure that we know.
Howie is back,
baby.
You guys had no idea.
Yeah.
It was just an assumption that he was dead.
Yeah,
no,
and
checked.
We never checked for his body, right?
No,
nobody
no.
asked specifically.
Well, it's also not like any of you had any interactions with Howie. Like, we should check on the scorpion. Like,
right.
Who cares?
Lork doesn't know he has an amazing Southie Boston accent and attitude.
Yeah. But now he's back.
And I'm going to... I think we have to endeavor as players at some point to try to hear him. So we're going to have to find a way.
Maybe Galabras eventually can speak with animals. Someone's got to take a level in druid. You got all this cool druid shit and scrolls.
Yeah. Just the ability. It should be a side quest for the party.
Right.
Is like, learn how to talk to Howie.
Yeah.
To see what he has to say.
He may know things.
Well, that was great as well. I thought, you know, in general, did you, you were happy with the episode. You were happy with the role playing. You thought that it was, I mean, do you worry that those episodes are ever going to be slow versus the combat? I mean, what do you think is more interesting, a combat episode or a role playing episode?
It depends. I think they can both be great, and we've proven that. We started off this show with a murder mystery, and so those first few episodes were all role playing.
Yeah, interviewing.
And I think we were worried
interrogating.
That once we brought the combat in and dice rolling and
5 foot stab.
Addition,
and flanking,
you know,
and
math, that it was going to slow things down, and it ended up not being the case whatsoever. So now I no longer worry, like, oh, that was a slow one. It was too much role playing. No, it goes both ways. I think role playing episodes can be as harrowing and amazing as these crazy fights with magical creatures.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it is nice as a player to be able to check back in with your character.
Yes.
To think, what is my character thinking? You know, not just, I got to survive. I got to save so-and-so. I got to save this person or that person. Oh my God, this person died, but we don't have time to grieve. We got to move on. It's nice to check in. Like, how does Lurk actually feel about losing Gormley? You know, it's tough to take the time to do that when you're constantly under fire. And it's nice. I think it's a good thing in a game in general for a GM. It's like, make sure you're checking in with your players, so with their characters, so that they're connecting.
It serves two purposes, I think. One, it allows you guys to really get into your characters. As a DM, you know, it's hard sometimes to get players to think like their characters. So I try to do that a lot. What's going on in Galabras's head right now after he went through all this? What's happening with Baron? You know, because it allows you guys to really embody your characters. And secondly, it allows me to hear how you're feeling so that I can adapt and change the story based on your emotions.
You tricky bastard. So you're doing it for you all along.
The secret's out. It's all for me. All!
Yeah, no, I completely agree. In my other game that I run, Council of Thieves, I had a situation where I was, you know, I checked in with the players because we are in the sixth book of that adventure. We've been playing it for 3.5 years, and it is coming to a close. And it was just, it was time to say, you know, I think of Apollo 13. Let me guess, you never saw that either?
No, you maybe see that one.
Yeah, that's such a good one.
That's a solid one.
But it made me think of Apollo 13 when he says, you know, gentlemen, what are your intentions? You know, we're getting to the end, and it's, you go to the party and you say, you know, we're coming to the end of this. What are your intentions for your character? Where do you want them to finish this story?
Right.
And let's work on it together. And they came up with so many different things, and it gave me a great pool to pull from for how to work the ending and make it my own. And by my own, I mean like our own.
Sure.
For the players. Because, you know, you're doing a pre-written adventure. It doesn't mean you can't change anything that you want to change to make it custom to your party. So checking in with them about what they want for their characters can be very rewarding. And it can help you, like you said, to shape the story a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Speaking of, you know, working to shape the story, doing things deliberately, I have a question about, let's go to the end of the episode. So the end of the episode, okay, we are able to get off the boat and start moving toward Red Lake Fort. It's actually happening.
Yep.
We're actually getting ready to go to this place. I can't wait to see.
Started talking about this 20-something episodes ago.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what's actually going on there. I have my theories, obviously, but I want to see what happens. Either way, I take Lork out and I say, I want him to range a little bit. So Lork ranges ahead. And,
split the party.
Split the party, which you never do. But in this case, I just thought it was realistic, right? He's a trained ranger and he's looking out for the party. He thinks if he's looking ahead, most likely he'll see any danger before it gets anywhere near his friends. Well, what happens? He fails his perception check. Or you just decided to make it not happen because you're a terrible person. either way, Lork misses it, right? He's a little older. He's had too much time out of the field. And he's got to work his way back into not missing those little things. And these guys pop out behind us. Now, there's a great dialogue with these orcs.
Yeah.
We don't get a lot of that. We don't get a lot of the villains coming out and talking to us. And it was tailored, obviously, to us. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you're an amazing actor, but it was pre-scripted, am I wrong?
I kind of outlined it out, and then I try not to read directly from the script, but I pretty much had an idea of what I wanted to say, and I had the bullet points in front of me. And
so how often do you, I mean, obviously we haven't seen a lot of villain dialogue, but how often do you plan specific dialogue that is not in the adventure path, that is tailored to your players, that you write in advance?
Not as often as you think. I'm just that good at improvising and coming creative stuff in the moment. And I'm not just saying that. I really don't. I don't prepare too much. I'll have like sentences that wouldn't be the way a person speaks. And then I'll turn that into dialogue as I'm reading it to myself.
Huh.
Or, you know, the more prepared you are.
You mean a pre-written sentence that they suggest
sentence,
you say.
Yeah. Or something like, you know, sometimes the story tidbits in the book that are written as like, here's what happens, here's the da-da-da, and I'll be looking at it and turn it into dialogue as I'm talking to you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's a great way to reveal stuff that you otherwise wouldn't know as a PC. I'm like, how can I get this information to them? It's not like a perception check, so have a NPC tell you, or in this case, an enemy.
If you were, now you had some idea of this, you said you had some notes on it, on the encounter prepared for, you know, some level of dialogue. I was thinking this as a player, you know, at the time when it seemed so crafted, so tailored to our party.
Yeah.
You had such good insults for each person and everything. And Lork not being there, you know, and missing it. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to.
I wasn't planning for that either. I did not say, oh, Lork's not going to be there. No, I figured you'd be there.
Right. So my question is, if you prepare something like that as a GM, a cool start to an encounter where the players, you know, you're going to put them to a decision where you actually don't know what they're going to decide. You weren't so sure, you know, what we were going to do. So when you put all that work in and you're not sure what the outcome is going to be, but you want that start to start the way you want it to start, you know, would you have let Lork see them in advance? Would you have let them get us get a jump on them and take them out? And then all the, I know it wasn't a ton of work, but the work you did to what you thought would be a cool start to the encounter is cracked. The code is cracked by the players and they get in. And don't you think that that's a worse experience for the players?
Well, I find that anytime I prepare something, I know you guys are going to do something different. So I try to prepare for how you're going to change it. Now, in this case, I had no idea that you were going to split up, but I could have very easily had you encounter the four orcs and the giant, and then they're nowhere.
So you would have done that if I rolled a natural 20 on the perception and a natural 20 on the stealth.
Absolutely. I could have done a myriad different ways. I could have had you just encounter the four orcs and them encounter the giant. You encounter the giant, they encounter the four orcs, or all of them encounter you.
And you're prepared to do that on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the whole time I'm thinking, when you started ranging ahead, immediately my wheels start turning. Okay, how do I want to do this? Let's see how Lork rolls. Ooh, not a great stealth check.
Right.
Okay, all right, well, maybe I'll have this. All right, this is what's going to happen.
And then you just got to decide and you just got to go with it.
Yeah, and I thought it was actually foolish for them not to surrender.
You do.
I thought they would surrender.
Huh. Well, you know, we got to see what happens, how far into it we get, but they definitely, I mean,
I thought they would just lay their weapons.
It's on.
Yeah, you don't need a cha.
So, you know, we're sitting here between episodes and we know that Galabras has gone giant Galabras. So, you know, what is going to happen?
Miles away. You're so far away from the map.
I'm so furious. I can't even begin to. But before we go, I do want to get to some listener mail. We got to squeeze this in. We don't have a lot of time.
It's about damn time.
But yeah, we have, you know, the questions are coming in. We really appreciate it. But I actually, you know, I wanted to go back to a little bit of an older one. This is from listener Jimmy, who I didn't see where you're from. If you guys write in, tell us where you're from. We'll shout you out. But one of our listeners, Jimmy, you're going to know who you are, wrote us a question about Pathfinder versus 5e for a new gaming group, and then you know, some tips, any suggestions for getting started. And I liked his question because even though you've partially answered it in episode 21, Lork out below.
Right.
If you want to go back to that episode and listen to Troy's intro, there are some tips there for how to get started playing Pathfinder. I think he was framing his question in a way that was like, I think I have some people that are maybe not big gamers, not big geeks, and might not get a little overwhelmed with the rules, and it might turn them off, you know, the excessive rules. So the first question was Pathfinder or 5e? Troy?
I mean, Pathfinder.
Next question. Then the next question becomes, and I understand that, you know, we could go into arguments for both, but we play Pathfinder for a reason. We think that it's better. And so there's, you know.
Well, it is better.
but there is the element to it that is like, it is customizable. Just because you're doing Pathfinder, people say, oh no, beginners is better for 5e because the rules are a little bit more open to, you know, you making things easier for a beginner. Pathfinder, you're so bogged down with all the rules. It's like, you are only bogged down by what rules you want to be bogged down by.
Exactly.
It is the game you want it to be. So what I suggest, Jimmy, you have a player in your game that is that might get turned off by getting hampered down by a whole lot of rules. Great. I've been in the same exact situation, and it's just the first thing that you do is you test them out early on. You have some plans to kind of dip your toes in the water, see how they respond to certain things, like saying, oh, well, you can't take a 5-foot step there because it's difficult terrain. You know, if they're like, wait, what is this? Whatever. Like, okay, well, then, you know, all right, let's not get into too much nitty gritty too early. If they say, I want to jump back, just say, okay, you jump back. And then you just say, without them even being able to say anything, you say, all right, well, my guy's going to take a swing at you. Oh, he misses. You know what I mean? Just so you start planting the seeds, even if the attack actually hit, you're planting the seeds for like your action caused a reaction from my character. That's all you need to know. You don't need to talk about attacks of opportunity or no free action, 5-foot steps in difficult terrain. And, you know, this guy has combat reflexes, so he could do it multiple times. No, you don't have to get into all that. But you plant the seeds by, I think, you know, making things easier and making it about story. So a lot of times what I tell characters, or players rather, is I say, just tell me what you want to do. Don't talk to me about move actions, standard actions, swift actions, free actions. I just say, tell me what your character wants to do. I rarely give, almost never do I give a new player, and I've introduced a lot of people to Pathfinder, do I just give them the core rule book,
right,
and say, like, see you next week. You know what I mean? Like, I just bring them into the game. First thing I do before the game starts is I sit them down and we talk about a character. I give them a background of the story that they're going into, and I say, what kind of character would you like to bring into this situation?
Do you want to be a guy who fights with a sword and has a shield? Do you want to be a guy that casts spells?
Do you want to be a woman that is dressed all in black and wields two daggers and is hiding in the night? You know, do you want to be a woman who is an old witch, you know, which is exactly what Matthew said when I started him on Pathfinder for the Glass Cannon podcast. I literally said, what do you want to do? And he said, I think I might want to play like an old witch. And it was like that, that was the seed. That's where it started. And then we started talking about, okay, you know, what kind of witch do you want to be? Do you want to be a loner witch? Do you want to be in a coven? Do you want to be, and that's that kind of stuff. That's not rules.
No.
You're getting the player invested in a character to start. You don't start talking about rules yet. You start talking about story and character building. And you can, from there, once they're invested in their character, I think they'll put up with some of the rules. They'll put up with trying to figure out the math because they're like, I want to know what my character can do to get cooler, to get better. And you know, everybody loves advancement. So once you get to the advancement stage, you're gonna see them getting excited about their character leveling up. But yeah, the point being, I would suggest, and you did this for the Glass Cannon for me as well. You gave us a background and you said, all right, tell me what kind of character you want to talk about playing. And we talked about it before we started. Little snippets of the backstory or whatever. And then you as the GM know the rule set. So then you fit it into the rule set. Okay, so the character you're describing is kind of like a rogue, but maybe more like actually a swashbuckler. So let me show you this other book. There's this thing called a swashbuckler in the Advanced Class Guide. And it, you don't have to tell them like all the theories behind it, or the, you don't have to do panache points and explain what they do. You can just say, this is a character that is more, has more bravado and is a little bit, you know, more of a hotshot rather than just a sneaky person. But he has some of the sneaky elements. She has some of the sneaky elements, and utilize that kind of language rather than leaning on just the Pathfinder core rulebook language.
And I would take it a step further, and I could be wrong. You might disagree with this, but I would say suggest core classes for new players.
100%.
You know, Matthew and Grant are newer players. Grant's been playing for a little while now, but they're newer players, and they wanted to jump straight into Witch and Gunslinger. These are extremely advanced classes, and now Magus as well. And that's fine. I think they're doing a great job with it, because now they're heavily invested in the game, and they read as much online as we do. But for people who are totally green, and you're worried about them getting overwhelmed, have them play a fighter. Have them play a rogue, a cleric, not even a wizard. Do a wizard.
No wizards. No wizards allowed. No, but if they say, like, I want to be a wizard, then that your work is cut out for you. Like, it's fine. But it's like, don't bog them down in the rules.
Right.
Start them off and just saying, okay, you're going to have
a spell. You'll be useless till third level.
Right.
First of all, you're useless till third level.
All right, here's your best friend, and hand him a crossbow.
Right.
But no, you basically want to, you don't want to get bogged down in like, okay, so you get as many spells as, you know, 2 plus your intelligence modifier, blah, blah. No, you're just going to say, all right, you're going to start off with 5 spells. And you're not going to say, here's the list of all the spells in the core rule book, the ultimate magic, third party spells. You know, you're going to just say, you're going to take grease, glitter dust, you know, scorching ray, right? Yeah, get them started off with a little bit of offense, a little bit of defense. Help get them a good start with your advice, and don't give them all the options, because it'll just, it could very well turn a player off.
Yeah.
You know? And then once they start going, you know, Matthew, Gormley was not Matthew's first character ever.
No.
His first character ever, we did, like you suggested in episode 21, it was a one-off Pathfinder Society sort of thing, and he did a fighter. And when he finished, I think he had leveled 2 levels in the fighter through a couple sessions, and he just said, you know, I feel like maybe I want to take a rogue level. And that was coming from a place of, he was like, I want more complication. I want more things to read and learn about, you know, than what the fighter is giving me right now. So, you know, I think, yes, I agree. Start with core classes, take it slow, do a lot of the work for them early on, mm-hmm. and don't read rules to them. Just let them, when they're in combat, say, what do you want to do? Well, I want to climb up that wall, jump over, go to the other side, and then drop down on the guy and hit him. Okay.
All right.
This is going to take a couple rounds, but you're going to do it. Now, here's what you got to do for me. Roll a die. If you roll high, it's going to be super easy. If you roll low, you know, maybe let him succeed anyway and just tell him like, oh, but you sprained your ankle, so you got to walk a little slower, whatever. Bob and weave with it, but don't read them rules yet. And pretty soon you'll find the players that end up loving the rules like us.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you again, Jimmy, for writing into us. Remember, write into us at glasscannonpodcast@gmail.com to get your general questions answered on the air. And remember to rate us on iTunes. Check out the Twitter at glasscannonpod. Skid does amazing work on the Twitter. And Troy, you're on it a lot as well. So that's a way to reach us and to help us, you know, get the word out there about the episodes and the podcast and everything. Thank you guys again for listening. Troy, you are the best, buddy.
I want to roll up a wizard right now. Can we just end this and I'm going to go roll up a brand new wizard?
You know what? I'm going to stop this and let's do a wizard. Which spells did you want? I'm going to start with
transmutation magic.
Okay, school of transmutation. Okay. All right, we'll do. What do you want your fist to turn into?
A larger fist.
Classic.